Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. The Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
Paris Hilton says she's packing her bags for Rwanda. The 26-year-old celebutante wants to use her fame to bring attention to social causes, especially where poverty and children's issues are concerned.
We now have video of Kevin Spacey's meeting with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. The Oscar-winning actor and Chavez, one of Washington's most outspoken critics, met privately for about 3 hours Monday.
I had an opportunity this afternoon to visit the new film center.
State television carried footage of Spacey saying that the country's film studio offers Venezuelans a valuable opportunity to make films about their own country and their own culture. Chavez has also hosted recent visits by Sean Penn and Danny Glover.
What is it about these people? Does anyone have any idea why they do this? Why? Why would Paris Hilton think anyone cares that she's going to Rwanda? What public relations moron in Hollywood thought this one up? And moreover, what in the world does AP, Associated Press, think by saying Hugo Chavez is one of Washington's most severe critics? Are they insane? Has Marxism infected the media to this extent that they think we don't know that Hugo Chavez is a dictator who has closed down opposition newspapers, closed down opposition television stations, closed down privately run film studios, and is creating the equivalent of Nazi Germany's Leni Riefenstahl state-sponsored film studios? Who do they think they're producing these things for? Have journalism schools degenerated to this extent that morons come out of school and put out these cheerful, soapy things about a dictator and they think we don't know the difference? Guess what? I know the difference. Some of you know the difference. But I'm afraid that an entire generation has been lost to brainwashing, incidentally. Now we got a better one for you. Here's another one for you. Paris Hilton's going to Rwanda for God knows what reason. This one, Angela Jolie, whatever her real name is talking about the education needs of Iraqi children, and she calls Israelis occupiers in the next one. Listen to this one.
The conflict in Iraq has displaced over 4 million people. There is an appeal from UNICEF and UNHCR to address the education needs of many of these children. The entire appeal equals about 8 hours of current spending in Iraq. In the last couple of weeks, we've been able to inspire this brand new partnership that we're very excited about between UNICEF, Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, and IRC to provide distance learning for displaced children, including children affected by Iraqi conflict and the Palestinian children in the occupied territories. I'm very excited to be here today, and I'm very proud to be standing with this amazing group of people. I am so moved by all that they've done and all that we're going to do together.
I'm speechless. I don't know why anybody would go to that Dimwits movies. I have no idea what she has. Got a good behind? If she put her behind on her neck, we'd be better off, to be honest with you, than what comes out of her mouth. I could finish this statement if I was in a nightclub, but I'll cut it off right here. So there's the, I mean, I'm looking at the world. The world is getting crazier by the day. They have a debate last night, a Democrat debate that nobody watches. Who watches these things? Last night's so-called debate between the Stooges was the second lowest rated of the political season. The only one that rated lower was by the moron on MSNBC's debate before the AFL-CIO. Nobody's watching these things. Why are they running campaigns 2 years ahead of an election? Who decided to do this and why? I told you why. They know that you detest them. They know that you have no faith in the political system. They know that the only way to pull the wool over your eyes is by continuing to look more and more shallow so that eventually you give up altogether and you turn over your vote by not voting whatsoever, that you say it's all the same and I don't want to vote. And eventually we will have the oligarchy that we already have, but without the sham of an election. There's no point to an election. Do you think we should continue to have elections? They're a sham anyway. Bush has already shown you which side he's on. He wants Hillary to be president. His nightmare is that somebody outside the Beltway becomes president. The Bush power machine is so terrified that somebody outside the Republican Beltway machine becomes president that they're putting all of their efforts behind getting Hillary elected. Do you understand this? No, you don't. So you worry about polar bears. Here's another story here. It's about Southwest Airlines. They have given up the pre-boarding for families. Now you say this is a small story. It isn't a small story if you fly. I detest pre-boarding for families, and I'll tell you why. Because it's a racket. I've seen this over and over and over again. They bring one child, and then there's 16 relatives from Indonesia. Have you ever seen that one? And they march ahead of you. You could have gotten there 3 hours before with the Southwest Airlines or whatever. How about if you get a first-class ticket on another airline where they used to let this racket go on? We'd like to pre-board anyone who needs a little extra time. It's like Lourdes Cathedral. The minute that announcement comes up, they leap out of their wheelchairs. Have you ever seen that one? It's like the blue zones for cripples at restaurants. They have the minute they get in their food, right away they're cured. They leave the canes, the crutches, and the wheelchairs in the car, and they're racing already into the restaurant with the parking spot right in front of the takeout window. I saw it at Backout Restaurant the other day. I went to Outback again, Backout. It wasn't bad. It really wasn't. I'm starting to like chain restaurants more and more because it's less formal. There's less involvement with the owner. I don't like patrons in restaurants. I don't want to hear their whole life story every time. I really, you know, from garbage man to restaurant owner. I'm sick of it. I just want to go in a chain from Australia, if you don't mind. Get served better. The kids are younger. It's not like a whole story every time you go in. Is the food better? Yes. Where else can I get a baked sweet potato without butter on it? And they don't even advertise on the show, so I'm going to stop right here. What am I talking about? You don't care about family pre-boarding on the airlines. You ever see those rackets? You ever see that one? We'd like to give him some extra time. We need a little extra boarding. Please go to the boarding gate right now. All of a sudden, they're all hobbling. And the minute that door opens up, the crutches are left there in the wheelchairs, and they're running already up the ramp. How did they get cured instantly? I'd like to know what the cure is the minute they get to the ramp, that they can leave the wheelchair. And then they make the poor guys carry them. That's another racket in Safeway. Have you seen what they do to the poor clerks in Safeway? Would you like someone to help you up to the apartment with your bag? And you got these old SOBs who were miserable, nasty people their whole lives. And just because they're old and senior citizens, you think they got better? They're still miserable, nasty SOBs. And they make the girl carry up a bag with like one box of lox in it, like the weighs 6 ounces, to their whole apartment. And then the next time, carry them up for free. I'm neither here nor there today because there's no news. There's absolutely no news whatsoever. I mean, unless you think that there's news in Paris Hilton going to Rwanda or Angela Jolie adopting an entire nation now or Kevin Spacey cruising with Hugo Chavez, there really is no much. There's not much news. Kiefer Sutherland getting drunk. I guess his ratings were down a little bit, so he needed to be in the news. So his publicist probably said, I tell you what, go out and get a DUI. That'll get you back in the public eye. You look wild and free. The girls are doing it. You may as well get a DUI. You know, you'll put you back on the front page. It's actually a plus here in America today. AP reported a video put up by the government showing the potential destruction caused by hackers seizing control of a crucial part of the electrical grid. That was an interesting story. Now we're supposed to fear they're going to wake up one morning and some hacker knocked out the electrical grid. That's the next fear. Since there was no terrorism now for 5 years, and they have to justify Homeland Security. Somehow now it's the terrorism can knock out the electrical grid. So I thought of getting a diesel electric generator for one of my properties. But I don't know who to. Who do you call up? They're always like crazy guys on Benzedrine. These guys that come by, they always look like they just got out of San Quentin in that business. Isn't it true? There's certain areas of home improvement. I have nothing. If you did your time, you're fine as far as I'm concerned. But they always come out like with gang tattoos hidden with long sleeve shirts. You don't want them around your property. Listen, I got the gold down here. I want to show you where I'm hiding. Can you dig a safe for me so I can put the gold coins in? Yeah, come over with your friends some night. I want an off-brand. Put the gold coins in the basement. You don't know which way to turn. The country's going to pieces. Why? Why? Because no one's at the helm. Here's wishy-washy Bush. Here's flip-flopping Bush. First, there is no climate change. There is no Kyoto Protocol necessary. Now he's hugging a polar bear. From there's no climate change to I'm a polar bear hugger now. Now he's a polar bear hugger. Overnight, they became polar bear huggers. Last week, they were against global warming. They said it's a scam. Now they're hugging polar bears. The biggest spender in the history of America is George Bush. Many of you don't know this, but he is a fiscal socialist. I try to tell you that. And you took offense at it because you don't like the facts, many of you. He doubled spending. Let's put aside military spending. Putting aside military spending, if you analyze, and I have the data right in front of me, Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, Father Bush, Clinton, Baby Bush, and Baby Bush II, the actual annual growth in selected agencies by president is astonishing. I can read you by committee. You ask me the department, and I'll give you the answer. And overall, the spending has been doubled under George Bush. In fact, he created a program called prescription drug spending, a prescription drug program, which, by the way, he opposed during the debates, if you remember, because I knew it was socialized medicine. And now all of a sudden he's outspending liberals, and the people don't even understand this. This is unbelievable. But you don't care. What can you do about it is the point. You see, the point is not that you're apathetic. I understand that. It's like there's nothing you can do about it. So you figure, why care about it, you know? Angela Jolie, a United Nations ambassador, the UN Children's Fund. Is there something wrong with this woman's brain? Does anyone understand why? Who tells Paris Hilton to go to Rwanda and why? What does she think she is going to get from this? Can anyone answer this question? Is there a psychiatrist in the audience? Salt Lake City, Utah. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation on a completely different topic. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I wanted to call and thank you. You got the most wonderful voice on the radio. My dad died 10 years ago today, and he was a New Yorker. And every time I listen to you, I hear my dad talking, and I want to thank you for that. So I love listening to your show.
I become sort of like the Dutch uncle of America, the kind of the guy who you don't really want to listen to, but you know he's right.
Yeah.
I once compared myself to the uncle that many families had many, many decades ago that, you know, there were Sunday dinners, believe it or not, for families in America. And on Sunday, the families would get together. And there was an uncle who would come over. He'd argue with everybody the whole time, and no one could beat him. He'd argue with the whole family, and you couldn't wait till he got out of the house. And then by around Tuesday or Wednesday, you actually started looking forward to the dinner to argue with him again.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And my dad, he worked for the sanitation department in New York, and he'd come home with the greatest stories. I don't want to take too much of your time.
Now, he wasn't the guy who put my dog Tippy in the back of a garbage truck, was he?
No, but he did. Some of his friends did see a dog jump out. I think it was in the Bronx, jump out of a third-story window for no reason.
That's a terrible story. I hope the dog didn't get let's not go into it. I don't know the dog. I'm soft on dogs. I can't help myself. Anyway, thanks for reminding you of your father, the garbage man. That's a good start to the day. It put a warmth through my my chest area. I'm glad that I remind them of Art Carney in the Honeymooners. That started the day off just perfectly. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Country's like a sieve. Country's like a sieve. The borders are open. The laws are useless unless you're a taxpayer. Here's another story on my website. Two liberal slime bags just knocked out two provisions of the Patriot Act. And the judge they took it to was appointed by Bill Clinton, who says for over 200 years, America has functioned with constitutional protections, and we've done just fine. Now, she doesn't realize that Islamo-fascists would like to slash her throat and throw her down a well. nor does she care, nor does the slimy lawyer who brought it to her, nor does the pig who brought the case care about it. All they care about is that they can undermine the United States government. So, you know, we the people feel threatened and vulnerable when we see that vermin like this can shop cases like that to judges that they own and undermine our security. It's amazing to me what is going on in this country. Here's another one. 6 years after 9/11, GAO officials crossed the U.S.-Canadian border successfully carrying radioactive materials three times. You hear? It's on michaelsavage.com. I mean, and we're feasted to Paris Hilton going to Rwanda, Angela Jolie raising money for children in Iraq, Kevin Spacehead meeting with the dictator Hugo Chavez, Associated Press calling him a president. It's astounding. It gets worse by the second, you know? No? Yes, maybe. Whatever. Well, you want to talk about generators for when it all comes down, man. Does anyone have a generator? Does anybody have a generator in the back of their house? Does it work? I thought about putting one in somewhere, you know, like, because you can run the basics on a generator. You can't run air conditioning, but you can run a refrigerator. You could run, you can get your internet porn. You wouldn't have to do without that in case there's an atomic blast 1,000 miles away and the grid goes down. You could still get your porn. But seriously, what do you need something to run your basics, some lights, your computers. For sure, you'd want enough electricity to run that. TV probably sucks an awful lot of power. I really don't know what kind of wattage it pulls. And then, of course, you may want to have something to clean water, like if you get a creek near your house. I know this sounds crazy to people living in New York or like a big city. It sounds like it's a right-wing nut stuff. That's okay. You can laugh at it. I really don't care. It makes no difference to me if you wind up starving and eating your own child. After it all comes down, because you're such a good liberal. It doesn't matter to me that if you have to eat yourself at the end of the day. Most of America thinks about this. We west of the Hudson River think like this, incidentally. Yeah, I'm an ex-New Yorker, but I haven't thought like a New Yorker since about 1965, thank God. I mean, I haven't thought like one of those people since 1965.
Savage.
To the max, a remarkable new demonstration just released by the Department of Homeland Security shows what could happen if a sophisticated hacker were to get control of a U.S. electrical system.
All right, so we lose everything. Now, I have, luckily, a dumb house, not a smart house. See, a smart house is quite vulnerable to an electrical grid attack. A dumb house is actually not as vulnerable. You don't realize that. All you greenies don't realize that should we have a hack attack on an electrical grid, you're in real trouble. I have a dumb house, and my dumb house doesn't need as much electrical current as you need in your smart house. We have with us a guest named Robert Bly from Power Tech Engines in California, and I want to ask him some questions about installing a generator in a house. Mr. Bly, thank you for joining us.
I'm pleased to be on your show, Michael.
All right, let's say I have a 6,000-foot house on a hill, two levels. It's a dumb house. It doesn't have an awful lot of gadgetry in it, a couple of computers, a couple of TVs. I certainly wouldn't want to hook it up to air conditioning. We'd forget that. How much power do I need in a generator, Mr. Bly?
Probably less than you think. The average house consumes an average, and mind you, this is an average, not a peak, of about 1,300 watts. You mm-hmm. can probably make it just fine with 5 kilowatts. We've sold hundreds and hundreds of generators at 8 kilowatts. Occasionally, people that do want to run air conditioning or they want to run solar chargers for their solar system use our Model 14.
All right. I have no solar system, but I have on my property it's not a well, it's a creek that collects in a large sort of little dam, right? And I have fish in this dam. Right now, I use this water to water a property. But in an emergency, let us say water got cut off. We're going to the extreme here. And I want to filter this water. I had it analyzed. It has E. coli in it. And I want to get an electrical filter, something that can, you know, substantially filter water for drinking. Is that within the realm of the power grid you would install with a 5-kilowatt generator?
Yeah, I think you could probably run one of those. It depends on what size pump you had with it, but typically you wouldn't need more than maybe a horsepower or two to pump anything you need to drink or use for
exactly. I'm going to make a few gallons a day to drink. So far as bathing water, though, what would I do about water that has E. coli in it? I don't want to use it for showering, do I? I'd have to take it into a collecting basin from the basin and run it through a chlorinated tank, I would think.
We have many people that are off the grid or nearly off the grid, and the number one load that they have that's in addition to their house is a well pump, typically 1-2 horsepower.
Really? Interesting. So let's get back to the kind of generator I need. In Florida, I've looked at properties in Florida on the coast. All of the bigger houses all have their own electrical generators, and it's pretty common in Florida. They're not as common in California for some strange reason. Well, there's more hurricanes. I guess that's the reason. What kind of generator do I need in terms of cost? How much does this cost to install?
Well, you can buy a portable. Even one of our small diesel portables is under $3,000. You can spend 3 or 4 times that if you want to get carried away.
I've seen the portables. I've seen them in Home Depot, for example. How do they work? I mean, what, do you plug it into something? How do you make it run through the system?
The biggest problem with a portable is that you need everything you want to run on it, you have to plug into it, or you need to work up some sort of a transfer system to make sure that you don't put power out on the dead power line when you're trying to energize the wires inside your house.
Or let's say I don't want one of those hokey systems. I want a guy to come up, lay a concrete pad for me, put a generator up above the house on the hill, and then run wires from there or whatever, a conduit, into my electrical system itself. Now we're talking about a different realm, right?
That's correct. And it also depends on whether you want the generator in a sound enclosure or whether you want an open skidded unit that you can put in some sort of a shed.
No, I have no shed. It would have to be an enclosure, sort of like on a boat. I have a generator, and it's in a sound-shielded container. So on a property, we're talking about how much money now to do this?
Now, that raises the price. You're in the 10 grand and up region right there, depending, again, on the size of the unit. And
how much gasoline does it use? In other words, this is running off diesel fuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we then have to put in a diesel tank on the hill feeding the generator?
And yes, and in California, if it's over 55 gallons, it has to be UL. And I think the cheapest UL tank is close to $2,000.
All right, but let's say I want to do all of this. I want to do the backup system. Is it tough getting zoning permission to put in a diesel tank on a property?
Very community specific. Some communities down, like one in Southern California that came to my awareness last year, has some very specific sound levels that have to exist at the perimeter of your property. Others, mm-hmm. typically many of our units go in the countryside where nobody gives a hoot. In the city,
yes.
People care a lot.
Yeah. No, this is not in either of those places. But, all right, so you're talking about what now? Now we're going to the next level. You say the generator connected to the power supply in the house is $10,000. Now you're talking about a tank for $2,000 to $3,000. Is that installed, $15,000?
No, you're going to have some installation costs, and you're going to have some electrical costs. We're beginning to see contractors are actually beginning to build transfer switches into some of the houses they build because it's much cheaper to do it when you build a house.
Oh, right. So in other words, you have to convert, what is it, DC to an AC current? Is that what you're doing?
You need to be able to disconnect yourself from the power grid in order to energize your house because you can't plug in or you could energize the power system and kill someone.
Oh, my God. So in other words, this is very interesting to me. So you have the backup generator, but if there's any current coming into it from the power grid itself, you can't use the generator because you'll blow the system out.
Well, you don't blow it out, but yes, you could. But the key thing is, the major thing is, it's a huge safety hazard. So PG&E and other folks require that you disconnect. If you're going to run your house on the generator, then your house can't be connected to the power grid.
Can a switch be put in which takes you off the power grid and puts you onto the generator where you have that control?
Yes, the least expensive one of those is roughly, $1,200 or so, plus whatever it costs to get it installed. And it actually has an automatic exerciser built into it. That's a 200-amp one in a NEMA 3R box, so it's drip-proof. It can be mounted on the outside of your house.
Very interesting to me. Are you getting increased calls for this kind of thing?
Oh, it's huge compared to where generators were, say 10 years ago. With today's computers and all the other things that people are doing, when the power goes out, in the old days, everybody used to treat it as kind of a lark. They'd light the candles.
You'd light candles and have a little fun for the night.
now it seems to be a horrendous interruption. Like, we had a power outage in Los Altos that was 3.5 hours duration the other afternoon. I mean, it was less than a week ago. And it's just amazing. All of a sudden, you can't do this, you can't do that, because the power's off. Yep.
So people go into a panic if they can't look at their computer. They have this anxiety that if they're disconnected from the net, they're going to go insane.
I guess there are some like that, yes.
Well, I'm lucky I grew up in the pre-television age, where I learned how to entertain myself by building models and staring at the horizon and playing with a dog in the dark.
You've only got a few years off me, Michael.
No, I can get along quite fine without electricity for a while, but I'm talking about, you know, we're talking about something, you know, here's a report came out today that Homeland Security, I'm making it very news-oriented. You're going to get a lot of calls tomorrow, which is Homeland Security says terrorist goes into the grid, they can screw it up, and our power goes out. So people are going to say, well, wait a minute now, I have a house, why can't I get a generator? That's what's going to start happening.
The biggest threat to our power system is none of us really realize until something like that disaster that happened 10 years ago in New York and, you know, shut down half the East Coast, we don't realize how interconnected it is and how finely balanced it is. And it doesn't take a whole heck of a lot. There have been a lot of articles written about just that event, IEEE and whatever, but people have studied it. And I can tell you that some parts of the country, our power system is very precarious. I'm not familiar with exactly where and under what conditions, but there are other places where it's more stable. There are also areas of the country, you mentioned Florida earlier. Other places that come to mind are western Pennsylvania, the western side of the Carolinas. Every time there's an ice storm back east, there are guys that are without power for 4 or 5 days. Our phone rings off the hook.
Is your company national or only local?
Well, we're the California, Nevada, Hawaii distributor for Ford Power Products. We also handle two other engine lines, Lombardini, which is now owned by Kohler, and another company called Iveco, which is part of the worldwide Fiat companies, one of the largest engine manufacturers in the world. And they all build generator set engines. And we not only build small ones ourselves, but we also supply engines to people like Multiquip, who build very large. If you're building a hospital and you want a standby generator, you go to a company like Multiquip, or you go to Kohler or Onan or Baldor or somebody like that who's in the big generator business. You get what I'm saying?
Yep. Well, I'm a big fan of the kind of diesel engines and generator I have on my boat. I've had it for 5 years, and they're the best engines I've ever owned in my life. They're Cummins diesels, probably your competitor, but I've never had a day that this engine didn't start. Never. Never quit. I mean, it starts every time. You don't sell Cummins, right?
Because at the farm show, and this was my 28th year at the Tulare Farm Show this year, we had a lot of people come up and look at our Iveco, and they said, Rob, that looks a lot like a Cummins. And I said, yeah, well, ours are dark gray, and theirs are yellow or red. And if you go over in the Case booth, they're black, and if you go in the New Holland booth, they're blue.
Guy looked. What do you mean? Said, they're all made by the same company?
No, I said, but the plant, the engines are built in a plant called the European Engine Alliance, and it belongs one-third to Cummins, one-third to Case New Holland, and one-third to Iveco.
Oh, my God. So it's a multinational manufacturing base that makes all of them?
No, just certain models, the 3 and 4 and 6 liter engines.
It's really intriguing. No, it's intriguing how when you open up a question like this, how it branches out into all sorts of issues of international trade and this and that. Where are they made? They're made in Europe?
Yeah, they're actually made in a plant in Turin in Italy.
Why don't we make engines like that here in America, since we're such a great nation for manufacturing? Don't we have generators made here?
Most of the manufacturing base of that sort of thing has moved offshore. You take the generator in, for instance, Cummins owns a company that used to be called Newage, but now they call it Cummins Generator Technologies, that builds generator ends. And Newage is a 100-year-old company, very revered, one of the largest in the world. Their plant used to be in Minnesota. They still build a few there, but the majority comes out of the original plant in Stamford, England, or in a new plant that's about 10 years old in Mexico, or in another one that's about 5 or 6 years old in China.
Unbelievable that we've even lost the ability to make an engine in this country because of the offshoring. Well, I didn't want to talk about that part of it, the political. I really only wanted to talk about the mechanical part of it, and I think you've answered the questions. The bottom line here is for a 6,000-square-foot hillside house, I'd need to spend about $15,000 for a top-of-the-line system that can run most everything?
Yeah, and installation costs and other things are going to vary things. And we have dealers throughout the state that can work with people. We actually don't do installations, but we sell and provide the units, and we manufacture some.
Well, when we get off the line, please give the contact from my area to my producer, and we'll see what happens from there. I'm getting ready for Armageddon. I'm sorry.
Well, if you think power is a little iffy here, you should try it in the third world. But generator sales world countrywide might have been up 15% last year in the U.S. In India and China, it was 300%.
Right. So anybody who's affluent in those countries automatically puts a generator in the back of their house, right?
They don't build an office building or a plant without putting a generator in it because the power grid that they have is so iffy that they couldn't run a production line without it.
Isn't this wonderful? You see, I found something about radio, Mr. Bly, power tech engines, which is that if I follow an interest that I have for that day, which is this, I think it becomes an interesting show topic, and I really appreciate your expertise, and thank you very much for being with us.
Well, you're welcome, and we're pleased to be a guest.
And thank you, sir. And Beowulf, please get the contact for the guy to come over and blah, 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 you know. Anyway, it's an interesting side topic. I'm not going to talk about this now for another hour. I just thought it's an interesting question about the generators for houses. I think we may see more of this as time goes on and as insecurities are flared up by the government. I'll be right back. Savage. Now, Mike, we got a 5-kilowatt generator for you city slicker types, but you want to throw in another kilowatt if you want to do your own jerky. You got another kilowatt if you want to heat up your hot tub, Mike. I don't know where this ends, you know. I have no idea how far this goes. This is so, like, threatening to, let's say, people in Hollywood or New Yorkers. They think that this is all unreal, you understand, which is why they use drugs and go to Rwanda. What in the world is Paris Hilton going to Rwanda for? I still don't understand that one. And Kevin Spacey cruising with Hugo Chavez? Amazing. Absolutely amazing story. Now, what's this? We got to talk about Myanmar today. I don't know, with the murders there, with the saffron robes. Again, no one can put that. You can't put your mind around that one. This is like one of those weird stories that even if you're in the news business, you still don't. It's like, duh. I mean, you stare at it like, sort of brain like, what is this? What is this with monks with sticks in their hands? They all like supposed to be peaceful and like eat rice and hit gongs. Now all of a sudden they're beating up soldiers with sticks and getting killed because of it. We understand there's some kind of dictator there. He wears a uniform. He has sunglasses. But there's no story. We don't get it. What in the world is going on there? I know that somehow it's going to be related to global warming and George Bush. I'm positive. Eventually, the blame will fall upon Nixon for something he didn't do or something he did do about Burma in the 1960s. I'm positive it'll go back to Nixon. San Diego, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi there, how are you doing? I'm calling to talk to you about the Myanmar situation and the monks down there. And essentially, I was wondering not only about that, but about the whole situation in the Middle East. How are these Eastern religions able to get such a mass following behind their ideas? And it seems like every major Western religion hasn't been able to do that in the last, 100 years or so.
It's very interesting. You're raising a fascinating point. The Muslims can mass hundreds of thousands in hate rallies. The Buddhist monks can be massed against the military. But here, you can't even fill a church.
And it's not because people are opposed to violence or not opposed to violence, because you could go either way and still have a mass following, which has been evidenced by this situation.
So what is your allegation or what is your suspicion here? What are you – your suggestion is what?
There's an obvious moral bankruptcy in the country. And
well, that's a given. When you see Paris Hilton, the celebrity slut, thinking that by going to Rwanda to bring attention to poverty – that's going to play in America. Or you see Angela Jolie, well-known only because of her derriere, talking about UNICEF and children. These people are insane. They don't know what they're talking about. But this is America. We'd rather look at someone's, you know what, then look at the reality of our country's moral decline. What are we supposed to do about it? You know, it's each man has to tend his own garden at the end of the day, Chris. We got to watch out for our own self. What else can we do? You know?
Division.
That's all. I don't even want to get into moralizing. To me, it's an impossible situation. What's happened in the last 10 years is astonishing. The church collapsed because of the predators in the Catholic Church predominantly. I mean, let's not put that aside. The scandals of the child molestation, the man-boy love association in the church, and I was the supporter of the Catholic Church even through it. I even had the head of the Catholic League on the show then stabbed me in the back when I stood up to Cardinal McPhoney because he wanted to flood America with illegal aliens. Then I got a knife in my back. So I don't support anybody anymore. I found out that they're all in it for themselves. Nobody was there for me ever. So I have none of them on my show anymore. They could take care of their own problems. They're bigger than me. They got more money than I do. They have more power than I do. They're connected to the power grid and I'm not. So you know what? They don't need me. But let's not forget the fact that the child molestation scandal inside the Catholic Church is one of the main reasons there's a lack of, a big contributor to the moral collapse of America. Don't tell me that didn't affect America's morality. You know, you'd be lying if you said so. So you could blame Paris Hilton and you could say this moron, you know, the Rwanda, but they're a symptom. They're not the problem. Hollywood is the symptom. Hollywood is not the problem. So you can say Hollywood morality is gone. Since when have actors been looked upon as moral guideposts? Never. Entertainers are by and large creative people, nervous people, edgy people. Doesn't make them bad. It doesn't make them good. It's what they are. In order to be creative, you have to be somewhat, unstable. That's the word I was searching for. Unless you're unstable, you're probably not a very good entertainer. In fact, I think the more unstable you are up to a certain point, the better the entertainer you can be. Now I'll go from there to the next point later.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Classic bait and switch.
Focus on that as opposed to focusing on
what's
really
happening. I don't have to deal with Iraq. I don't have to tell anybody what I'm going to do. Everything we do in Iraq is obviously right because they said this about Petraeus, as if it was the only issue in the wide world. I mean, come on, these Republicans that are all upset about Petraeus, this is one newspaper ad. These are the people that ran a television
on and on and on. There is. He's back. He's back. He's back. Turn him off. Please turn him off. There it is. Bill Clinton again. Attacking General Petraeus, supporting MoveOn.org with ACDC 360 Anderson Blooper. Now, there's some very good news. Instead of just talking about bad news, here's some good news. It's on MichaelSavage.com where we went to various sites and got some good stories. And this one comes from the Houston Chronicle. And it's a huge story. And that is that the so-called DREAM Act, which would have given citizenship to illegal aliens who stole an education, is dead. Harry Reid pulled the DREAM Act from the defense authorization bill because the opposition was so great to the so-called DREAM Act. And I want to tell you, remember I was attacked about 4, 5, 6 weeks ago by a group of illegal aliens and their communist lawyers here in San Francisco? They wanted me fired. It was all about the so-called DREAM Act. These are kids who stole an education by getting it for either in-state tuition, even though they're illegal aliens, or getting their educations for free. And now they have the audacity to say, now that I've stolen an education, now you owe me a green card and citizenship. So they've got quislings like Durbin in the Senate who are working for them as fronts for La Raza. Durbin's own Lock, Stock, and Barrel by La Raza. He may as well just get a sombrero and pointed boots and stop speaking English. Durbin is a disgrace. He's owned by the terrorists. He's owned by La Raza. He's owned by everybody anti-American, Durbin. He's a disgrace. That's the same vermin who called our troops Nazis, and he's still elected. But let's put that aside. He's finished. Durbin tried to attach the DREAM Act to the Defense Authorization Bill. Durbin got smacked in the face by his own party. And Reid, who's a much smarter politician than that dirtbag Durbin, Reid pulled the measure and pulled it out, and it's over, at least for now. Now, of course, that got La Raza, the race, upset. Cecilia Munoz, senior vice president of the National Council of the racist group La Raza, said that they're going to keep pushing it. They're going to keep pushing it, and let them keep pushing it. You see, 60 votes were needed to surmount an expected filibuster, but they couldn't get it. Why? Because senators were being barraged with calls, faxes, and emails from people like yourself who said that the DREAM Act is amnesty. And even Quisling Republicans who supported amnesty before have been reluctant to do so now because they realize that their tails are on the line. So there it is. That doesn't stop the enemies of the law, you understand. It does not stop the enemies of the rule of law. They will do anything they can to get around the law. But wisely, Reid pulls the DREAM Act out of the DOD bill. It's up on michaelsavage.com from the Houston Chronicle, and I suggest you read it. Kevin in Portland, Oregon. KXL, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, please explain to me your hypocrisy in that while you quite rightfully condemn MoveOn.org for its character assassination of General Petraeus, nonetheless, when it comes to my friend, Brandon Mayfield, and his respected lawyer, Elvin...
Nobody knows who Brandon Mayfield is. Nobody ever heard of the dirtbag except you.
I'm sorry, Michael, he's the guy...
Nobody ever heard of the dirtbag except you. What is the issue that the mainstream America would know that you're babbling about? What is it bothering you? The Patriot Act you hate? What is it about the Patriot Act that offends you?
You have characterized the man...
I asked you, what is it about the Patriot Act that makes you left-wing fanatics hate it so much? What is it that you fear in the Patriot Act? Can you please describe it, sir?
Well, I'm asking you a question, Michael. Why have you...
No, you can't ask me a question. I'm not on your show. You're on mine. You're telling me that you hate the Patriot Act, and you're glad that a federal stinkpot judge in a fetid black robe just gutted two more provisions of the Patriot Act. What is it that you liberals fear about the Patriot Act? You have 60 seconds to tell America what you fear about the Patriot Act. Would you please do so, sir?
To admit that you're a hypocrite.
You won't answer the question. You know why? Because you're a pot-smoking, degenerate, left-wing vermin. And if I had the power, man, not only would your lawyer friend and that judge be put on trial, but so would you. But you're lucky that I'm only a talk show host. I have no power whatsoever. Now, you keep gutting the Patriot Act, and one day you're going to wake up to a mushroom cloud in Portland. And then what are you going to say? Nixon did it?
No, I'm buying a generator just like you.
Ah, go to heck. Go back to the woods there and eat the cranberries. I was going to say something else, but I'm not in a nightclub. It was a berry, but it wasn't a cranberry. Let's put it to you that way. I realize you're not in a men's claw. It may be hard to find that kind of berry over there, but you'll do the best you can. You see, they won't answer a question. This is the thing that I detest about liberal psychotics like him. I gave him 60 seconds to tell you what is it about the Patriot Act that he hates. And instead of answering it, he went on and on in circles. He can't answer it. These people are just generically opposed to the Patriot Act. They don't really know why. They know they're opposed to it, but they don't know why. And if you ask them why, they can't answer the question. It's so true of extremist progressives that if you actually ask them to describe what it is they fear about a certain thing, why they oppose it, they cannot or will not answer the question. They will either talk in vague generalities or they won't answer the question whatsoever. You understand or not? Now let's go on to other topics. Burma is for some reason up on... Could you play Symphony Sid for me? I got to get in the mood now after that rat got in my head. I got to clear the rat out of my brainwaves. With my boy Mike in the nation. And my boy Mike in the nation. Jumping with my boy Mike in the nation. What I grew up on, that's all. Nat Cannonball Adderley, this kind of stuff. Unbelievable. My father didn't know what it was. He wanted to throw the phonograph out the window. What do you listen to that garbage for? Where'd you get that garbage in the house? What are you listening to that junky music? Get it out of here. Listen, the whole thing. Look, he had a different background. He listened to no music, by the way. There was no music permitted. I told you, we drive to work grim. It was like Grimm's Fairy Tales. Driving in the DeSoto to work. You turn the radio on. Turn it off. You're going to work now. But we're not there, Dad. We're on the way. Get ready for it. A man gets ready for work. He doesn't listen to music. You weren't allowed to have music. It was like, well, in a way, Plato wrote about it in The Republic, that artists were degenerates who had to be thrown out of the future Republic. And Plato wasn't wrong. He saw it coming. If you actually read Plato's Republic, it's quite interesting. And so, sir, what would you do with the artists and musicians? Answer, they lead the youth astray. They must all be deported from the nation. Oh, Plato wasn't wrong. I mean, we love them all. We all love the degenerate sluts from Hollywood making an idiot of themselves and disgracing the nation. But there are a number of us who would think that they should be sent in a one-way ticket to Rwanda and not come back. We could do without the entertainment. In other words, if the trade-off is no entertainment but no celebu sluts, I would say I take no entertainment. That's all. Okay. I wonder if the celebu sluts are going to be allowed in Hugo Chavez's movies that he's going to control with Kevin Spacehead and Sean Pencilneck. Why would Sean Penn, who lives in a mansion in Marin County, California, with a nice wife and nice children, what does he find appealing about a dictator named Hugo Chavez? And if he does find Marxism appealing, why doesn't Sean Penn go down to Ellis Street in San Francisco with a bus and pick up as many junkies as he can find, and alcoholics and transsexuals, and bring them back to his house in Ross and put them in his house? Put five in each room like in Dr. Zhivago. At least he could put his money where his mouth is. I'll never understand how they think we don't understand this. Now, we got another soundbite for you here, which is the story about, no, not Peter Pace and the homosexuality. That is his religious belief, and he's 100% entitled to it, to believe that homosexuality is immoral. He's entitled to it. Of course, you ask most men in the military, they believe it too, that if you put a homosexual in the showers, it would sort of destroy group morale to a certain extent. But don't tell that to the Hollywood idiots. They say it's not only good for people to have homosexuals in the military, it'd be good for the military, it'd be good for the national morality, which is now an immorality. But where's the one I'm looking for? Angela Jolie discussing a new partnership between UNICEF. Nah, that's not even funny anymore. I want to hear clip 24. That's what I want to hear.
Paris Hilton says she's packing her bags for Rwanda. The 26-year-old celebutante wants to use her fame to bring attention to social causes, especially where poverty and children's issues are concerned.
Okay. Does this make sense to you? Which publicist in his wrong mind figured this out, and on what drug? What drug was the publicist on who thought that sending Paris Hilton to Rwanda would not be seen as a laughingstock across the world? What in the world is she going to do there? How in the world can she help the poor children of Rwanda? It makes no sense. Kansas City, Tad dislikes the Patriot Act. Tell me what you dislike about it, Tad.
What I dislike about the Patriot Act? Sorry,
yes.
I had to slow the tractor down. I couldn't quite hear you there. Well, three words, expanded police powers.
Okay, but in general, that makes sense. But specifically, who has been damaged by the Patriot Act other than people who would harm us?
Well, anything that infringes upon my freedom.
No, but you're talking in generalities again. And in generalities, we could have this discussion in a college lecture room, saying, yes, expanded police powers are not good for democracy. But who that you know has been harmed by the Patriot Act other than someone who would have done this country harm? Can you name a person, or even have you read of a person who was harmed?
Anybody personally that I know? Well, the thing is we can't find out, can we? Because they're doing illegal wiretapping, and, you know, it's not like the NSA.
What is it that you're hiding that you're afraid of illegal wiretapping? What do you do on the phone that you're afraid they're going to learn about?
Well, there's nothing that I'm hiding, but, you know, maybe someday I'd want to hide something. I don't know. I just feel like...
All right. Well, that's a fair answer. We all maybe have something to hide. I can hear you on that. And we're all afraid of an over-snooping government. I understand that. How would you conduct surveillance on would-be terrorists? What would you do if you were in charge?
if I was in charge, well, thank God I'm not. But
okay, you're a nice guy, but you're not equipped for this question. And that's the problem that the government faces. And I'm 100% on the side of the government when it comes to surveying would-be terrorists. 100% behind them. 1,000% behind them. The only people who oppose the Patriot Act are terrorists, counterfeiters, child pornographers, drug dealers, and other unsavory characters who have the ACLU in their pocket. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is none other than the Savage Nation. We're rolling along from generators to Patriot Act to whatever, the Hollywood idiots. We're all marking time. We all know that behind the scenes something terrible is going to happen. We sense as a, just on an animal level, we have a sense of dread. There's no reason for news radio, news talk radio, unless we sense that there's something wrong. Now you say, well, okay, don't you guys stir it up? Well, yeah, oh, sure, we stir it up. We make the Muslims blow things up. We make Ahmadinejad come here and say that the Iranians are a superior race, Islam is a superior religion, and that he's going to destroy the world unless the everyone converts to Islam. Yeah, we created that. We in talk radio created him. He's not a creation of the madness of a particular, let's say, branch of a religion. You see what I mean? So we know that behind it all, there's a madness in the world and that it has to be contained like a virus. That is, it's a low-grade virus right now, and it is being contained by Dr. Bush. Our fear, though, is that Dr. Bush is not aggressive enough as a surgeon in exterminating the virus, or let us say controlling the virus, whichever way you want to put it. Many of us would prefer a much more radical surgeon to go in and to wipe out the virus called radical Islam. We don't like living with the cancer. We would rather go in and kill the cancer, annihilate it with radiation. Does that make sense to you? Does the analogy hold up, annihilate it with radiation? Sure it does. Some of us would like to see a radical surgeon take control of this country and use radiation to exterminate the virus of radical Islam. Get it? Scott in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thanks for taking my call. I have a hip replacement, I have a knee replacement, and I have washers and nuts and bolts in my shoulder from an accident I was in. And I smoke pot to eliminate the pain, which works quite well, and it's far less harmful than OxyContin and Vicodin. So when you always continually knock pot, it's just, it's not true. And do you know why it's really
illegal? Hold on. Were you smoking pot before your hip replacement?
Yeah, I did.
So you've been a pothead all your life?
Not all my life, but I have found out that it stops the pain. But you know why I really...
Well, of course it stops the pain. So does heroin. Why don't you just use heroin? That'll stop it even better.
That's addictive.
Oh, marijuana is not addictive?
Not in most people.
Okay. How many years have you been addicted to marijuana? Excuse me, been smoking marijuana?
I've smoked pot on and off for about 20 years, on and off. Okay?
You're saying that that's not... An example of an addiction?
No, people drink wine every night for dinner. They're addicted to wine then.
Again, but you're jumping. You're comparing wine to marijuana. They're not the same. Wine is water. Alcohol is water soluble. It leaves the body within about 6 to 24 hours. The toxins and the active principle of marijuana, notably THC, is fat soluble, and it stays within the fat tissue of a body for weeks, if not months at a time.
4 to 6 weeks, that's correct. But you know why it's really illegal? Back in the 30s, when the cotton growers were growing cotton, they realized that hemp was actually a far stronger
supplement. I heard this whole story. I know the pot industry has sold us a bill of goods that it's wonderful and healthful. You haven't seen the latest studies of the massive numbers of young people having clearly psychotic episodes on marijuana. Now, maybe it's not true for you. The medical marijuana industry, secondly, is a criminal industry by and large. They are not selling marijuana to people who need it, as you may need it for pain control. They're selling it to addicts who are simply getting a prescription from a shyster doctor who should be in prison.
Savage.
What's very interesting to me, there's a story that I found. It's called Amsterdam Dims the Red Lights. And what they're doing is the city has bought up some of the red light district storefronts where girls cavort half naked and sell their bodies. And the buyer of these red light district storefront prostitution booths, I guess, was a not-for-profit organization backed by the city of Amsterdam. And they want to get rid of these buildings. What I'm getting at here is Amsterdam is a very, very left-wing city where pot is legal and prostitution is legal. They've experimented with this for 20 years, and they realize it's devastated the center of Amsterdam, and they're trying to take the city back from this filth, from female trafficking, from money laundering, from drug addiction. But here in America, it is still being proposed as somewhat of a progressive concept to legalize prostitution, legalize marijuana. And what it really is an attempt to further hollow out the core values of the United States of America. Now, George Soros, as you well know, has funded the pot legalization measures both in Arizona and California. He's one of the chief defenders of this, and that's because he wants to weaken the United States of America. What I'm getting at is the countries that have experimented with this, the cities that have experimented with it, have seen what it's done to their cities. While here in America, we have not yet seen the extent to which the damage of the left wing will eventually be seen. In other words, in San Francisco, I can guarantee you that if trends continue with a despotic mayor who answers to no one, with a board of supervisors who answer to foreign powers, with a move towards legalized prostitution, legalized marijuana, legalized drugs, and set that they're going to go by the way of Amsterdam, thinking that it's a mark of progress. And it may take 20 years until the city of San Francisco itself shakes off these deadbeat bums when they're all dead and gone and says, you know what? The city is disgusting. It was dirty enough in the year 2007 with filth and cans and garbage in the street. And the mayor won't use the money to clean the filth. But now we have human filth in the city. And it has to end. And it's going to take 20 more years of this experimentation until America wakes up to what the left wing has actually done to the world. Now, when I brought up the pot, an addiction. I knew what I'd get. I would get the addicts calling the show. And I'll take a few of them. Here we go. Atlanta, Georgia, WSB. Go ahead, Brian. You have 60 seconds to make your point.
Savage, it is an honor. For 12 to 13 years, I was a huge stoner, huge piehead. Within 10 minutes of finding out that my ex-wife was pregnant with our first child, I got rid of what I had and have never touched it since. THC and marijuana is not addictive, my friend.
Let me say this. You're wrong. It's correct that you kicked it, no doubt, and you're not fibbing. I can get that. But you're a strong-willed person, and I've studied drug addiction, and I've studied people who can kick drugs. It's always up to the individual's will. It's up to no amount of treatment in the world will get a person off a drug. It's all rubbish. The whole treatment industry is built upon one gigantic lie. There is no treatment possible for drug addicts. It's an industry unto itself, usually funded by the drug dealers, but that's a separate story. If you want to kick drugs, there's only one way to do it, and that's through willpower. You did it through willpower. Alcoholics will tell you the same thing. They have to hit bottom, or they have to have a reason as compelling as you did to say, I'm never going to touch it again. But again, Brian, medically, it's true that marijuana is addictive. Moreover, THC, the THC content, if you want to shift to the content discussion, marijuana today is not the marijuana, for example, of 25 or 30 years ago. You're aware of that, right?
Oh, yes.
How long ago did you kick?
It's been about 19 years.
All right. Well, the marijuana of today is not the marijuana that you kicked 10 years ago. The drug manufacturers, meaning the drug growers, have made the pot itself so much more powerful that it's in magnitudes more addicting than it was in your day. But I hear you, and I hear what you're saying. Marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs for two reasons. One, people think it's benign, and number two, it's addictive. What I'm amazed at is every movie that I turn on, virtually every movie that I turn on, they show people having a joint to relax as though it's a social norm or should be a social norm. And yet, if you look at the behavior of the Hollywood sluts and the others in Hollywood, if marijuana is so good for them, why are they all winding up either a DUI or in a treatment facility or with wrecked lives or wrecked marriages? Don't they realize that we can compute the two and put two and two together? If marijuana is such a great norm, why does Kevin Spacey go and kiss the ring of a dictator? If marijuana is so good for you, how is it that Sean Penn cannot put two and two together and figure out that he's a total hypocrite, living in a mansion in a lily-white suburb and dancing with a Bolshevik who would put 50 people in his mansion if Bolshevism came to America? Answer, because there's a disconnect between their behavior and their speech. They don't even recognize what they're saying. Marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. I have lectured about this for 25 years. I've written about it for 25 years. I've talked about it since I went on the radio in 1994. And if I could save one kid from the terrible tragedy of being a marijuana addict by doing this every once in a while, it is worth doing it. But I'm not going to waste any more time on this. Unless we'll take a few more calls. I mean, we could talk about marijuana addiction, but it's really not the biggest problem in our life, truthfully. If a kid wants to destroy his life with marijuana, truthfully, let him destroy it. He wants to stick a shaft into his arm and kill himself with heroin. You know what? Let him kill himself for all I care. I could care less. I almost have a libertarian approach to drugs at a certain point. If you want to kill yourself with it, it's not my responsibility to stop you from being a fool. And it's not the government's job to spend billions of dollars to prevent you from doing it. You know what I'm saying? Go ahead and kill yourself if you want. That's my opinion. If your parents are that stupid that they let you do it, it's their fault. The bigger problem that we face, the biggest problem that we face is radical Islam. And if you don't know that, having listened to the racist Ahmadinejad the other day, then really you are a hopeless human being. The man came here and talked about the superiority of Iranians, the superiority of Islam, the superiority of their way of life, and that we all must convert to Islam for there to be peace on the earth. If you don't recognize that that is the virus that must be radiologically exterminated, then you don't know anything. Albany, New York. Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. I'm 27 years old. I quit pot about a month ago. I was a pothead all throughout college, and it is addicting, and it's the withdrawal. I had the goosebumps for about a week, couldn't eat for about a week, couldn't sleep without Tylenol PM for a week, and the addiction is actually hereditary. My father was addicted to pot for years until he had a terrible accident at work, and I truly believe...
How many years had you smoked marijuana? How many years before you kicked?
Probably 8 or 9 years.
You're going to have 8 or 9 years of struggle. I'm going to tell you right now, you're not over it at all. You've got 8 or 9 years of you're going to remember it, you're going to want to try it, you're going to say it's not so bad, you're going to be around people who smoke it, you're going to get a contact high. You've got 8 years ahead of you to get over this. Don't think it's easy. It is a very, 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 very addictive drug. Thank you for calling. Now, you may ask, why is it that the leftists in America fear those who go to church more than Islamic terrorists? You have to ask yourself, why is it that the Hollywood idiots, the run-of-the-mill, garden-variety left-wingers in this country have a greater distaste and distemper for example, they'll say evangelicals, with such contempt and fear than for the Islamic terrorists? It is because many of them are marijuana addicts. Many of them are potheads. And you don't understand the danger of marijuana unless you see the connection between marijuana, the left-wing movement, and their disconnect from reality and their disconnect from the realities of militant Islam. You understand that? Why do they fear conservative Christians more than Islamic jihadists? Marijuana. Don't you understand that? Why do they put the Quran on the same plane as the Bible? Why do they say Christians are bloodthirsty? Answer, drug addiction and brainwashing. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I believe the Patriot Act is anti-Republican. In the true sense of Republicanism,
You're speaking in generalities, and we can have that discussion in a college classroom. Tell me what it is about the Patriot Act specifically that you fear, or name an individual who was harmed by the Patriot Act who was innocent.
I see what you're saying in terms of a very specific point in terms of people, you know, have been chastised. I know Michael Moore did his whole thing with the one guy who was pulled out of the gym. And I know that's an asinine argument, but in the sort of logical sense.
In other words, if you want to have an academic discussion, sure, we're all against increased government and increased police powers. We all agree on that. Now, you're in charge of Homeland Security. How would you survey Muslims meeting outside or inside a mosque who have just come over from Somalia, who you suspect may be part of an advance guard of a cell ready to activate in America? What would you do?
Well, you know, I'm an academic as well, and so just to sort of, I don't know all the answers. I would want, one, I would have a true sense of the definition of jihad versus the actual Arabic word for an unholy war against innocent civilians, which is actually hirba. And we've not...
Oh, please stop giving me another conversion lesson here. Don't give me the fact that jihad means self-enlightenment. It has no such meaning whatsoever. It means taking over the world through violence. Please stop this. Please stop stop the big lie about Islam. Please. Not on my show. You're not going to do it.
Dr. Savage, we need to use the terms hirba because we're justifying to the enemy. I agree that they're the enemy. If we continue to use the word jihad, that's telling Osama bin Laden sitting in his cave that we think it's a jihad. We don't think it's a jihad. It's an unholy war. Not Quran approved, not done by the Mujahideen, but actually by the Musfidun, who are evildoers. And if we continue using words like Mujahideen and jihad, then it's condoning.
Why do the jihadists want to restore the caliphate? Can you answer that question?
Because they find a way to get around words. Instead of the word martyr, they use the word now martyr-like. We need to attack them with the same kind of verbiage, so to speak. We need to use our own rational, logical argumentation strategies and have a person who knows what they're talking about in the White House and hires people who know how to talk to these people.
Do you know that jihadists claim that by bombing people in America and in the West, they're actually acting out of a defensive act. It's an act of defense, not offense. Do you understand that?
Not to us, though, right? Is that what you mean? I mean, to us, it's an act of offense.
Well, if it was your child blown up by a bomb in a pizzeria, what would it be to you?
The offensive. So we need to do what, you know.
No, what we need to do is we need to go on the offensive and stop listening to these throwbacks and stop being so sensitive to these throwbacks. We need to go on the offense. We need to bug every mosque in the United States of America. We need to bug every Arabic grocery in the United States of America. It must be done immediately. And if the ACLU doesn't like it, then the ACLU is the problem, not the solution. Otherwise, there's going to be a dirty bomb going off in this country, as sure as I am sitting here. It is absolute national suicide to sit here and have these academic discussions about the Patriot Act is increasing government power. Well, how would you fight the war on terror? How would you find out which one of these people is going to be the next suicide bomber in a nursery school or in a mall? How would you find which one of our visitors from Somalia, for example, or from any of the other wonderful nations of that region might be coming here to do harm rather than to work in the old American way? There's no way to do it other than through surveillance. In other words, good old police work combined with good old electronic surveillance. And now you have the ACLU taking apart the Patriot Act measure by measure, step by step, by shopping it to red diaper doper baby scum in black robes, as just happened in Portland, Oregon. If it was up to me, that judge would be taken off the bench in an orange jumpsuit, and her robe would be burned because it stinks so badly. Thank you. I'll be back.
Savage.
It is a fact that if you teach your child to worry about polar bears and global warming, while the enemy is teaching his child how to run an obstacle course and shoot an AK-47, that we will disappear as a civilization within a very short period of time. It is absolutely true that if you raise your son to not hit back, to understand and reason with those who would hurt him, while the enemy is teaching his son to cut his throat, our civilization is doomed. It is an absolute fact that unless we become much more militant in our education, particularly of our young men, we will disappear as a civilization. It is an absolute fact that if we keep drugging our boys with Ritalin and with antidepressants, while they drug their boys with the fables of Islam, this civilization will disappear in only a matter of time. I mean, I could keep going on with my dialogue here, or my monologue, excuse me, but I think you get the point. In order for them to succeed, we need to do nothing more than what we're already doing. Unless this country is radically altered from the educational system right upwards through to the Supreme Court, this country has a very, very I have a very poor prognosis for the survival of America. Now, many of you say that, no, the country has survived quite well for 200 years with all of these protections and rights. But the world has changed. What you don't understand is that the world has changed. You don't understand that the status of the rest of humanity to the radical Islamists is not the status of the rest of humanity to you as an atheist or an agnostic or as a humanist. You may say that that humanity is all the same, but Islam doesn't recognize it as that way. The status of the rest of humanity is not recognized by Islam. If you have no faith at all, you're not recognized as a human being by Islam. You don't understand any of this. They have no tolerance whatsoever for Hindus, for Jews, for Christians, nor for Buddhists, the radical Islams. Take a look at how they treat their women in the radical Islamic nations. They wrap them in cloaks. They perform clitorectomies on them. Now, if you don't understand that there's a difference between Christianity as it is practiced in the world today, Judaism as it is practiced in the world today, Buddhism as it is practiced in the world today, and Islam as increasingly being practiced in many parts of the world today in a more backwards, violent way than it has been practiced for hundreds of years. There's been an actual turning back within the Islamic world rather than a moving forward. Many countries are moving backwards, not forwards. And unless you recognize this, the death of the West is the prognosis I would give you here. Now, I don't know why I decided to tell you this right now, but I guess I had to, because when I wake up today and I see that a publicist from L.A. has told Paris Hilton to go to Rwanda to bring attention to poverty and children's issues, or that Kevin Spacey is cruising with the dictator Hugo Chavez and glorifying the film studio of the government of Chavez, a man who closed down all independent film studios, or that Danny Glover, that hopeless fool, did the same thing, or that Sean Penn did the same thing, or that Angelina Jolie is discusses a partnership with UNICEF to help education needs of Iraqi children and the poor oppressed children of Palestine. I am telling you that the propaganda being put out by the left wing with their friends in the media is so powerful that the prognosis for America is quite dim. And there's no other way for me to tell you this than to tell it to you on a daily basis. But if I do it 3 hours a day, every day, you won't listen to the show. So I'll intersperse the reality of what we face with the realities of humor, the realities of Life 101, the realities of a meatball, if you will. And marijuana is intimately tied in with the death of the West. That is why George Soros funded medical marijuana initiatives in Arizona and California. He recognizes that the best way to weaken a generation of children is to put them on a drug. It's not bad enough that they've been put on the drug of liberalism and the medical drugs of Ritalin and Prozac-like compounds or antidepressants, if you want to just put it in the generic category. But he now has to put them on marijuana, telling them that it's wonderful for them to smoke marijuana, and that if they have a little anxiety, that's an illness, and they should qualify for a medical marijuana prescription and so forth and so on. These are all very serious issues, and they're all intimately tied together. None of them can be separated out from the other. The country is in desperate shape, and only I know how bad it is. No, I wouldn't say only I, but I would say in radio, possibly only I, amongst the top five, know how bad it is. One of them is a golfer. One of them is a leprechaun who changes form and place on a daily basis. And one of them is a wall banger who doesn't even know what he's doing.
Savage.
Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The American people are sick of their leaders rolling over for the Hitlers of this world. They're sick of their leaders rolling over for illegal aliens, rolling over for the deadbeat welfare cases who drain our system. The American people are sick of them, and I'm sick of them. They let illegals into the country to bleed us. They let the Hitler of Iran into the country to mock us. It's because they don't really care about the United States of America. If the United States fell off the face of the earth tomorrow, the government media giants wouldn't care. If every last one of our fighting men had their throats cut by the enemy, I don't think they'd care so long as they could still make a buck. That's all that seems to matter to most of them. The bottom line. Well, here's my bottom line. Close the borders to the illegal aliens. Close our country to the petty tyrants. Keep our nation strong. Get rid of all of the quislings who are pulling us over the cliff and into the abyss.
I believe we should vote against funding the war. In the absence of any clear signal or any straight up and down policy that puts pressure on the Iraqi government to make the political decisions that it makes, that gives the Bush administration the sense of urgency to engage in the diplomatic efforts, we are putting this all on the backs of our military, and there is no military solution.
I had my power lunch alone in a little restaurant. I prefer eating alone, but to make a long story short, as I'm walking down the mall, I see an ambulance, two police cars, and a fire truck at the end of the mall near a popular Italian restaurant. So naturally, I'm curious like everyone else. I go over. I see the fire truck, the ambulance, the police cars. I figured either someone had a heart attack in the restaurant or there had been an altercation. So I look and look and look, and I see a thin black woman, African probably, not African American, but African, sitting there. And one of the EMS techs is on his knees talking to her. He's on his knees now. He's almost begging her. It's almost a posture of begging the woman. And he's filling out form after form. The police are filling out forms. The firemen are filling out forms. So I said, "This dude, something doesn't add up here. I don't know what's going on." So across the street, I see a security guard. So I start to ask him what went on. So he smiles. He says, I don't really know. He was a black guy. And we talked. I said one thing or another. He says, "I don't know." He says, "It looks crazy to me too." So I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "Fiji." So I spoke to him in a little Fijian. I told him I'd been in villages going back in 1960s and this and that. And he said, "Oh, you're in the bush." I said, "Yeah, I collected plants." And I asked him what island he was from. And he told me Benga, the firewalking island. And I said, "I've been there." And he was very surprised. He was a young fellow, but he was also obviously new to the country. But he was smiling and he was very intelligent about America. He said to me, "Oh," he says, "this is what goes on in Marin County." Now, Marin County is Barbara Boxer's back yard. It's where things idiotic and liberal occur on a regular basis. I said to him, "Do you realize how much this is costing to bring in this ambulance, these police cars, these fire trucks?" I said, "What happened to the woman?" He said, "Let me find out." So he went over and he quietly spoke with her and he came away smiling and he said to me, "She said she didn't feel well, so she called 911. I said, "What?" I said, "It must have cost $200,000 in equipment and manpower, because this person didn't feel well." So he starts to laugh. He says, "That's Marin County. It goes on all the time." I said, "But that's why we're going broke. These people know how to abuse our country. They don't feel well and they call 911 and they get a nice fireman on his hands and knees asking her how she feels for fear of being sued by some rat bum from NYU, some scummy lawyer who should have been aborted as a child. Because that's why the country's breaking down. It's the psychopathic communist lawyers who have twisted the police and the firemen and the entire society around their fingers. Everyone reacts for fear of a lawsuit." So we walked down the mall together, and he just said, "I'm not surprised." He said, "This kind of insanity goes on from the north of the county to the south. He said, it's Barbara Boxer's backyard. And I said, Nisambula and blah, 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 and Samothe, which means peace in Fijian, and we bid our goodbye. So there it is. There's your United States of America, a nation filled with morons on their hands and knees to legal and illegal. It doesn't matter. The cops, the firemen, the police, everybody on their hands and knees to the illegal alien, asking them how they feel. What can they possibly do for them? This country is facing such serious problems. The change of demographics, the sweep of history sweeping over America, illegals running over us like the barbarians overran Rome. I'm telling you like it is. I mean, people who know history agree with me. I really don't give a damn about the liberals or the socialists who want to shut me up and tell me not to say these things. And not one politician in the United States of America running for the presidency, the man who will rule the most powerful nation on earth, will talk about the topic. What does that tell you about the state of America today? That all you've got are a bunch of people up there talking about entitlements for the sick and the meek, that we're going to give you more medication, we're going to give you more medical apparatuses, we're going to take better care of you if you're ill. Is that what America needs right now, is to focus on medical care? How about focusing on border security? How about focusing on language security? How about focusing on cultural security? That would be my platform if I ran for the presidency. And don't get me wrong, I'm never going to run for office. I will not run for office. That's not my point. Why do we never hear this out of a politician's mouth anymore? Why has the word nationalism become a dirty word? Why has the word sovereignty become a pornographic word? Why has the discussion of border policy become a hush-hush? Why is calling for English only something dirty? Why is referencing our cultural foundations, the Bill of Rights, the U.S. Constitution, the Magna Carta, if you want to go back to England. Why are we supposed to hide those documents? Why can't we talk about the greatest document ever written, which is the Bible of the Jewish people and of the Christian people? Must we also be ashamed of that? Pornography is allowed to be shown. Pornography is shown everywhere, every night, on every television screen in America, but the Bible is hidden. We have gone from the Gideons to HBO, all in one generation. Can you understand what I'm saying to you? Why do you think the Gideons placed the Bible in hotel rooms for so many years? Because they knew that when a person was traveling alone, they would be tempted by the devil. They knew that that person would be tempted to use drugs or to use excessive amounts of alcohol or to do something with a prostitute in that hotel room. They understood that. And so they felt that the Word of God placed in the hotel rooms might be the little deciding factor, the still small voice in the still small book that might keep people from wandering from where they really wanted to be, their decent natures. And what do you have now? Have you clicked on those pay-per-view channels? The Weimar Republic was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs compared to the vile filth being pumped into your hotel rooms and into your bedrooms. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure you've watched it. I've watched it too, until you want to puke from watching it, until you want to vomit from watching it. It's all filled with the harlots of the golem. It's the golem of the earth, the lowest of the low. And what can I say to you? We've gone from this in one generation. We have gone from St. Christopher medals to dream catchers in one generation. In one generation, we went from women like Rosie the Riveter until we now have the nauseating view of Rosie O'Dumbbell in one generation. Women who riveted ships together to women who try to unrivet the ship of state, all in one generation. And the question is, what can we do about it? The answer is, talk about it, walk about it, talk the talk, walk the walk, read the books, listen to the shows. But you've got to talk out, you've got to speak out, you've got to go to the rallies, you've got to speak to these fraudulent politicians and tell them to shut up and stop talking about medical care. Say, I don't give a damn about medical care. Talk about the health of the nation. Talk about the borders. Talk about English only. Talk about our culture. Stop talking about rubbish. That's what you've got to do. That's the only solution. It's the only salvation. We have to cause the revolution from inside the nation. We've got to lead the politicians because they are incapable of leading us. Savage. It is amazing to me that the American media would go to dinner with Ahmadinejad. I said a million times if Hitler came back, they'd crush each other's arches to get to go to dinner with him. They're soulless. You know, I really trace most of what's wrong with politics and the media, people in the media, to what drugs. I don't know how many of them are on antidepressants. My guess is a very large number. And what antidepressants fundamentally do are fight your conscience. When that still small voice starts to talk to you, see, there's a lot of politicians know that they're corrupt. And in the past, their conscience would get the better of them and they would cease their activities. But with antidepressants and with the growth of the shrink profession, which is the anti-conscience profession, a shrink says to you, you're depressed, when he really should say is you're a no-good swine. You should feel bad. In the past, the priest would say, of course you should feel bad. You're no good. Now we've substituted the doctor for the shrink, and the doctor says, oh, poor baby, here, take this. You'll feel better. And that still small voice will suddenly shut up. And that's why you get behavior like you get in San Francisco, for example. How many of them are on medication? I don't know. My guess is many. The people know this. They sense it. That's why the ratings for Congress are the lowest in American history. We sense there's something rotten. The whole tree is rotten. We know that. Something's wrong.
When the president says he's going to veto the bill, what he is saying is, I forbid health care for 10 million American children. There are 10 million reasons why he should sign this bill. I hope he will have a change of heart and a change of mind.
I have a couple of things I want to tell you about. A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to. Otherwise, I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of the sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the, oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it first, she pulls out a coupon, a transgender discount. In San Francisco, the mayor gives out transgender discount coupons. Insane societies, they used to give out discount coupons to war veterans. In this city, they give them out to transgendered people. That's right. In San Francisco, TGIF has a new meaning. That's right. TGIF has a new meaning in San Francisco. Transgenders, it's Friday. Portland, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling you today. I'm really angry. I'm having a hard time controlling myself. As I drive home and work today, I am getting angrier and angrier at these patchouli oil-wearing, Volvo-driving, fur-protesting, no-job, welfare recipient, amoral, anti-American, moronic liberals. I can't.
Okay. Good. Get it out. I want that primal scream out of Portland. I don't know how you take it. They're so full of themselves. All their bumper stickers, all their ugly faces, the little fingers they give you as they cut you off from the right lane. I know who you're talking about. The collaborationists. They would welcome the Muslims. They'd throw flowers in the streets if Osama came here.
I'm just having a hard time containing myself today, Michael. I've been speaking to some people today that have all these comments about the Bush speech, and they didn't even listen to it!
It's like Clinton didn't watch the 9/11 movie, but he knew it should be banned. And then after it ran, he said, I still didn't watch the movie, but I know it should still be banned because somebody told me so. I mean, what do you expect from a liberal? They're liars by nature. Portland used to be a great city until it was infected by the deviants of San Francisco, who left for cheap housing. They all drove up there in the 70s, as I said, in their old... You remember those B1 Volvos that they all had, all the feminists? They went over the pass, it may as well been the Khyber Pass, and they infected Portland, and then they destroyed Oregon. They absolutely wrecked Oregon. They destroyed it, lock, stock, and barrel. They took all of the pollution of San Francisco mentally and put it in your state. Where are the men of Oregon? Where did the men of Oregon go, Sean?
I don't know, Michael. We haven't had a Republican governor in 24 years.
But you used to be a state of the timber industry. It was an agricultural state, a fishing state. How did it become a cappuccino state? How did it become a state of latte lappers? How did it become a state of latte lapping losers who think that because they know the difference between a mocha and a latte, they're sophisticated? You ever see them online in Starbucks? I'll have a mocha double astape latte pate pate lappe. They sound like a bunch of kittens lining up for a milking.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hey, you ever see them, all the kittens? They all know the different coffee drinks. A double latte, a half a mocha, a double espresso. I want coffee from the 5,600-foot level of Guatemala. It should be organically raised. Is it a sustainable farm? I want a certificate to show me the farmer wasn't abused. Did the coffee bean go into the pot happy? Was it a happy coffee bean? Was it an abused coffee bean? I want to know if it was white people who were selling the beans or buying the beans or exporting the beans or transporting the beans. I want to know if the Latino people were benefiting from the exportation of the green harvest. And then when I get my coffee, I want the water to come from Mount Hood. I want it to be filtered water, special water, boiled water, sensitive water. I don't want to have any polluted water. I don't want any toxic water. I don't want any city water like the ordinary Republicans drink. I want a special liberal water, and I want it boiled a certain way to a certain temperature to mix with my 5,600-foot Guatemalan, a culturally sensitive, eco-friendly coffee bean. Incidentally, I do have to mention this. This is pretty amazing to me. I decided to do a pre-holiday giveaway on my website, and you could buy the three books now, the two books and a DVD that's worth $54 for $39. The sale is going to end November 1. I'm giving it away. It's after Labor Day, and I'm giving the house away. The Alzheimer's book, the Children's Naturally book, the DVD all for $39, and I'm going to give you as a package. You could buy it now as a gift package and give it away to somebody who doesn't want it. When I was a kid, every summer, I loved the summer. What kid didn't? Because in those days, you didn't go to summer school. You didn't go to a camp to advance your mathematical knowledge, another to advance your sports knowledge, another to lose your tubby waist. You went and had fun for the whole summer. And we were kind of poor, so what we did was, to get out of the hot inner city, the family rented a small cottage with all the other families from the neighborhood and relatives, up in the cool mountains called the Catskill Mountains, and they were known as bungalow colonies because you got basically a one-room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, boom. And your whole family was in there, but they were like, the whole thing was filled with your friends and their parents, so it became like a little village. Naturally, it was paradise because every other parent was your parent, and you reverted back to like another time in history, so it was wonderful. We'd play Indians out in the woods, and we'd carve trees and make canoes. God knows what we did. So in one of these places, there was a guy who was a caretaker who lived in an old abandoned barn with his wife, believe it or not. And he like mowed the lawn. He had the hammer, fixed the hammer. His name was Woodchuck Bill. And us kids, it was like a Tom Sawyer thing. We loved Woodchuck Bill. Kids loved. Now, remember, he was not a bum. See, today they're bum. They're homeless. He was what was known as a hobo in those days. And there were people who were hobos. They were sort of respectable in their own way. That was his job category. It was like hobo. He would put it on the IRS. Like, what do you do? Job category, hobo. I don't know what he made, next to nothing. But he lived up in this as I say, ramshackle, barn-like structure with his. He had a wife, actually. And Woodchuck Bill would regale us kids with his stories. And he was a big guy with a big stomach on him. So the story begins with him saying, all right, kids, come over here. Today they probably arrest him for molestation, just for even telling us a story. Some freak would arrest him. He says, all right, I want all of you to punch me in the stomach. Now, right away, that's rape today. It's raping a child in some way. So we'd all go up with our skinny little arms. We were 9, 8, 7, and punch him in the stomach, and nothing would happen. So naturally, we thought he was Superman. He must have been pretty strong. I mean, if you think about it, because they're 8-year-old kids that can give you quite a belt even today. Anyway, so we all hit him, and we realized we were nothing compared to Woodchuck Bill. Then we'd sit at his feet, and he would tell us stories. He'd say, I remember to this day, he would say, well, I've seen hurricanes, and I've seen tornadoes. Well, we sat spellbound, like really out of a book from the 19th century. So what I liked most about Woodchuck Bill was that he lived in this barn with almost nothing. He had his few pots and pans, him and a wife, and they hung from like hooks over the thing, and they actually cooked in there. But he said he used to eat woodchucks. We'd say, Bill, what do you eat? He said, we eat woodchucks. Who knows if he's telling the truth? I don't know if you can eat a woodchuck. And that's the Woodchuck Bill story. I mean, you wanted something more to it. There is nothing more. That's a jazz story. You got to understand jazz music to understand that story. It ends like boom, and the horn goes down. That's it. But unless you understand how jazz works, you're not going to be like satisfied, because you want a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then Bill raped us, and he was taken away by Child Protective Services, and we lived miserably ever after. No, it didn't happen that way. Today they'd arrest him for just being Woodchuck Bill. They'd give him treatment. They put him on a pill, and he'd probably go berserk and kill people in the on the IRT, throw him on a third rail when the pill wore off. Did I tell you about the chestnut man? I didn't tell you about the chestnut. Oh, there were a lot of crazy people in those days that were on the streets. Well, today they are too, but they're holding microphones and they're working for CBS. So one of our subway rides, cold, nasty, miserable, snowy winter day, slush, 11 years old, dressed up like smoke coming out of your mouth that was so cold. Your face was red. Your hands could freeze if you took a glove off. I love that weather. So there was like a bimmy who sold chestnuts outside the I used to love the Museum of Natural History. I loved the Mastodon. I liked the gem collection. I didn't know it in those days. It shaped a lot of my future to show you the greatness of our culture. When I'd go to the Museum of Natural History as a kid and I saw exhibits of a natural scene from the Fiji Islands with birds, little did I know that years later I would actually seek out that kind of thing in my life professionally, shaped no doubt in part by the great cultural institution of the Museum of Natural History. Of course, this is all lost today on the Islamo-fascists and the TV generation and the internet and iPod. I don't know what these children are going to become. What is their dream? What kind of dreams do these idiots have? I haven't any idea. It's very sad that children have no dreams, no nothing. They think everything's in, you know, like, oh, I'll give you another example. Oh, so the chestnut man, and I have another story from last night. I'm going to tell you the last night story before the chestnut story. After work, I went on one of my one-hour walks around downtown San Francisco. I need to burn off energy. Hat tilted low, collar up, anonymous. No one knows me. Till I open my mouth, then heads turn. So I don't say anything. So I like to go and look into restaurants and bars, and I like seeing people going home and the hustle and bustle. It's kind of a fun thing. It's the conclusion of the day for me to see that in this gorgeous, beautiful city of San Francisco. So one of the places I stop in is like this Shishi Hotel. It's got a bar scene. I like to see the hubbub and the scene. I never liked the bar scene when I was young, and I'm not in the bar scene, but I like to watch it sitting in the lobby. So I'm sitting in the lobby on a chair, and the bar thing is over there. Hundreds of people, I mean, the kids in their 30s all looking. Everyone's a 7 in there, which is actually why it's more fun. They probably go home with each other. 7s go home with each other. The 9s and 10s go home, you know, to psychopathic behavior. The 7s at least go home with each other because they don't think they're God. So it's a place packed with 7s, and I'm sitting in a chair outside in the lobby, and I'm watching the comings and goings. Every girl that comes through the lobby pulls out a cell phone, and even though they're alone, they're all looking in the cell phone, talking. They're making believe that they have somebody they're waiting for. That's the latest gimmick, and they think someone's buying into it, that if you pull out a cell phone, it means you missed the date's late, and you're there, and you're busy, and you're popular, and they're all staring in it like a text message. They're looking like inside a fortune teller's crystal to see if they can find a visage of the truth inside this little instrument in their hand is how it struck me. If I were like from another planet looking in, I said, what kind of madness is this? What kind of species is this that young females who are searching for husbands to settle down and have children are walking around with a device in their hand? Instead of talking to a man, they're talking to this device in their hand and looking at it and staring in it as though it's the Holy Grail itself. Now, to go back to the chestnuts in the open fire. We're outside the museum, freezing slush cold, and one of these bimmies is selling chestnuts on the, you know, and they're delicious. Man, they roast them out there. Do they still do that? I don't even know if they allow them anymore. And a guy, I'm with my friend, we're 11, and he turns out, he says to us, hey, you guy, I talked a weird voice. He was a big guy. He looked like the guy that George Michaels was allegedly cavorting with in a park there in London, got hushed up, like on the, you know, the rough trade type. But a little like lower class than that, even a little more nutty. And he says, hey, you kids want to see pictures of girls? So right away, I knew he was a dangerous guy. So we play him along. Yeah. Where do you got those pictures? You kids come with me. Come with me. It's only a subway ride. I'll show you those pictures. We didn't go with him, but we knew that he was a pervert. How did we know? Because we were allowed to ride the subway at 11 instead of being locked up behind a web page.
Savage.
Nutty friend, a real SOB, a piece of garbage. He was a miserable rat, even as a kid, a miserable rat, because he had a crazy mother who was on Benzedrine to lose weight. She went to some crazy doctor in Jersey who put her on speed. She'd come back nuts. I mean, crazy. And she'd drive the pink Cadillac. They had a little more money than everyone else. The father was hardworking. She was a nothing. Always on Benzedrine and a wacko. She was so crazy that she would take a dog chain, she once did this, and beat herself across the wrists, and they were bleeding. So when the husband came home at night, like from working all day from some delivery route that he owned, he had a franchise, whatever, she came screaming, and she said, Joe, look what your son did to me, look what he did to me. And the father would go upstairs, and he had a fist fight with the son, because the crazy mother said that the son did this to her wrist when she did it herself. Can you believe this kind of situation? So I have no compassion for him. He was a rat before that, and he's still a rat. He's still a no-good-nick. But he was a good friend of mine when I was in the fifth grade, because who knows? You don't know people. And since I was sort of a mischievous child, naturally I sought out the more mischievous of the students, those who fidgeted the most, had the brightest eyes, and never listened to the teacher. They were my kind of people. Today already they put us into Ritalin therapy and turn us into robots. I wouldn't be on the radio today. I'd be like an accountant somewhere in a prison. I'd be counting underwear for a prison somewhere to make sure that the underwear didn't get stolen. But the long and short was, yeah, the crazy mother. That doesn't excuse him for being nuts. As years went on, one of the kids in the neighborhood became a very famous, two of them became famous rock and roll singers, two, out of Queens. I won't mention their names. One had a big hit at 11 or 13 years old. He was always more mature than us. He had like women. You know, like guys at 13, like the guys with a pompadour, and he had like a girlfriend 19. I never understood that. We were still like dreaming. This guy had like a woman. You know, she was 20. I don't know how they got that. Like through the music business, they probably gave him a. So he went and did a tour. This musician in Japan at 14 dropped out of high school. He had one song. It was a huge hit, like 145. I don't remember. And it wasn't Run Around Sue, but it was in that genre. So he goes to Japan, a big tour. The Japanese always liked American rock and rollers. Now he comes back. Now it's years later. Now he's on his behind. And he's got nothing. So he becomes a U.S. postman. I swear to God, years later, the same rock and roller who had the Jaguar before anyone could even drive, the blue Jaguar, the cuff that stood out of the jacket, the pompadour, became a postman. There's nothing wrong with being a postman, but, you know, you start out as a rock and roller and you end up as a postman. That's a pretty hard row, you know what I'm saying? It's better to start out as a postman and end up as a rock and roll star. Let me tell you, what'd you say I was going to talk about before I told that story? He had a blue Jaguar, an XK140 MC drophead coupe. To this day, I want that car. I have a Ferrari. I still want that 56 XK140 drophead coupe. So that bad kid, going back now to the bad kid whose mother beat herself on the arm. So we like to go around all over New York by subway, and we were like 12, 13. We went everywhere. 12, 13, 14, Manhattan, Hubert's Flea Circus, down in the bowels of the basement of the subways, there were guys selling, like, they weren't porno magazines, they were soft core. And the old, you see the old geezers there lining up looking at the magazines. We try to, like, you look at them, hey, kid, get out of here, get out of here, kid, get out of here. You know, that kind of thing. So we used to like to go to Coney Island, and they had exhibits. I don't know how to describe it. They were like mannequins of wax figures. And there were some of them were scary as heck. Well, one of them was of George Matetsky, the mad bomber of the subway. And it was so lifelike. Like, if you were a kid 12 and you had just been on a New York subway car in the heat for an hour and you went out to Coney Island and you stood outside one of those exhibits and you looked in, they showed him like in a jail cell. The guy looked like he was going to come out of the cell and strangle you. Well, adjacent to that mad bomber display, there was another guy. This scared me to this day. I have nightmares about him. It showed a guy, I don't know what he did, dismembered girls or women. I don't remember what he did. He was really bad, this one. And he looked like ordinary Joe, white guy, ordinary guy. And they found him. I remember it was like a mad thing in New York. They didn't know what to do. Girls were being found dismembered. Finally, they tracked this nut down to a chicken farm in New Jersey. I don't remember his name. And he's got like a corpse in a trunk under the bed. I mean, the whole thing, man. So this exhibit in Coney Island of the wax figures shows this guy reconstructed in wax in a little room in the back of a chicken farm with a dismembered girl's body in a trunk, and he's got like blood on his feet with like a blank stare at you, and they show you like the feet and the hands and the blood. It was stuff that today they could never ever show you, but life was richer as a result. For example, they had freak shows in those days. A genuine freak show is not so bad. The freak had a job. If I went to Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey, I didn't go for the horse or the elephant. I went for the freak show in the back. The one-breasted man, the half-bearded woman, the microcephalic. In other words, the people who today became politicians, in my day, they were in the back room of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey without a Windsor nut. Or in another display, the same people today you might find on CNN or ABC or CBS, you know, after some surgery, they were in the freak show too. You know, half man, half woman, half human, half amoeba. And it was wonderful. I like the whole thing. You eat the popcorn, you walk around, you gape at the freak, you thank God that you're not like them. But the truth of the matter is, you say, well, it's exploited with a freak. No, if you ask freaks, I mean, a lot of them call them that today. You ask somebody, a freak of nature like that, they liked being in a freak show. They made a good living. They were around other abnormal people. They had a little, you know, world, a social world. They had sex, some of them, with each other. They socialize. Today, what? They sit at home watching television on welfare. You think that's better for a freak? No. So there's something to be said for going back to the America of the 1950s. Please don't bring up the Civil Rights Act. Do me a favor. I mean, America of the 1950s with a Civil Rights Act. Can we move on now as a better country? Okay, everyone's equal, but give me back the freak show. And give me back the exhibit of the guy that a kid could see there with a nut. Because, you know, why should a kid see that? A kid should see that to understand there are dangers in the world. Certain people are really crazy and bad. I had friends over Sunday, coffee, two people. You know, I don't have like a party because I like to, you know, have a conversation. You can't do it with a party. I'm not selling anything. If I was like in the insurance business, I'd have parties. If I was a real estate, you know, when you're young, you have parties. You know, I don't know why youngsters like parties. What does an older person need a party for unless they're selling something or trying to get something from somebody? I don't need anything from anybody. So the only people I talk to are people I actually like, which means I can count them on one hand. But then again, when I was a boy, I remember there was a man. I keep telling you about this man. I hope he listens. I doubt it. He would have to be like 85, 90 today. I haven't kept in touch with him for God knows how many decades. This guy was the man's man of the men. This guy, all the other men were small merchants. None of them were professionals. They were all immigrants. Wonderful men. Every last one of them was a good man. No one raped anyone. No one molested anyone. They all worked their hearts out for their wife and children. They were just great men. And they were always there, not only for each other, but for the children of the others. It was amazing how these people really were, these simple people. So this fellow was different. He owned a bar on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I'm talking about way back when. A very sophisticated man. And he had come up from the streets of New York. He was a fist fighter and as tough as they make him. And he used to talk to us boys. We play pool together in someone's house, maybe it's his. And he would tell us how to live, and he would tell us things like, I never forget it. He said, don't be afraid to get into a fight. The worst that could happen to you is you'll lose a tooth. I mean, stuff like that, stuff that you would never read about. Then he would say things to us like, money isn't the most important thing. How many suits can you wear at one time? I didn't even understand half of it at that time. But all of these little homilies helped me at certain stage of my life. And then he would say things like, the first million is the hardest. You may say you've heard this before. But I don't think we've heard it recently. You know what I'm saying? He was a great guy. And with reference to what I am talking about now, I draw a complete blank now as to what the reference was. So this guy, we'll call him, I'll give him a name, John. John said to me and the other boys, we must have been 10, 11 at that age coming up. John said that when you get older, if you have one good friend, you should consider yourself a lucky man. That's what he said. Now, as a kid who had a pack of friends, because all kids do if they're not weirdos, they run in a pack. All kids run in packs for the sense of safety, the safety in numbers. I know I did. And I was like the jokester and the wise guy, and everyone was, well, we loved each other. We would do anything for each other. You can call it a gang. We weren't a gang. We didn't kill anybody or rob anything, but we all hung out together. He said to us, when you get older, there's not going to be this group of people. You're not going to have this. You're going to, if you have one good friend, you'll consider yourself a lucky man. And then he would go into telling us about how a partner of his who he loved very much robbed him of a great deal of money, you know, and how who we thought was his friend turned out to be not. And as a kid, you don't understand these things. But as you get older, you know, the wisdom of the fathers in that practical manner can become very, very profound. I don't know if this goes on anymore today. I don't know if there are any fathers around who will even talk to the other kids. I don't know what they do. Do fathers get together with boys and give them, like, advice about life, how to live? Hey, guys, this is life. This is what you... I don't know. I really don't know. I think men are afraid to do it for fear that they'll be arrested for molestation. Or they damage the kid's mind. He told me I wouldn't have any friends. I'm suing him 20 years later because it's a class action suit against all men who said I wouldn't have friends.
Savage.